trusted source for sports and weather. Rhinelander boy abducted by beavers, rescued by hometown hero Freddie Mercury Palermo.
Local quilting circle erupts in violence. Have all the Northwoods grannies gone bad?
Taxidermist arrested after showing elementary school students there definitely is more than one way to skin a cat.
Are local supper clubs a hot spot for the Northwoods Illuminati?
Investigative journalist Piper Bottoms exposes a murder-for-hire plot involving the Smitty Bake Company and some overbaked beans.
But first, Elmer Jensen with the Northwoods weather.
This is Elmer with the Northwoods 5-Day Weather Report.
Sunday, cloudy with a high of 22 and a low of 10. The winds will be 5 to 10 miles an hour. Sunday night, oh no, cloudy skies early, partly cloudy after midnight, low minus 11 degrees Fahrenheit, winds southeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Oh, this is ridiculous. I can't feel my hands. I can't stand it anymore. My hands are so cold.
Well, that got awkward. Up next, JSE with sports.
Fuck the Bears. Aaron Rodgers is God.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve.
What did you think of the local news broadcast this week?
Oh, that went sideways in a hurry, didn't it?
Oh, man, it's you never know what you're going to get with local broadcasts. Anyway, how cold are you?
Well, according to Elmer, it's really cold and people can't take it anymore.
You can find Jay at https://https://muskie.org.
Oh, thanks for that explanation.
Super.
You can find me there. Oh, that'd be super, Steve.
Super. Anyway, Jay.
Yeah.
Man, big news. Big, yep. Big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big, big, big.
Yeah.
The new catalog is out.
The Muskie Shop catalog is out. It's in the mail.
2022.
You guys are going to be getting your copy soon. If you're signed up. If you got it last year, you're going to get one free in the mail soon.
If you don't.
Remember, they go bulk mail, so it does, it might take 2 or 3 weeks, but you're going to get it. If you don't sign up for free on the website, it's real easy.
Go and sign up now. It's actually really cool. It's got the Tube Screamer himself on the front.
It does. The Tube Screamer. You were in the boat that day.
Yeah.
That was a great day. That was the five fish day with Al Frost. That was taken on a local lake. Beautiful sunset, storm in the background.
Perfect.
Summer.
It looked cool. I know. I saw that cover. I was like, oh my goodness. I'm ready for it to be warm. But no, super cool. And then there's a lot of good little chestnuts in there.
Yep. It's 150 pages. It's the only thing of its kind on the market. There is no Muskie catalog out there even resembling what we're putting out.
No, it's got
for free. So I hope you enjoy it.
Get it for free, boys. Anyway, cool stuff in there. Just check it out. Like Jay said, if you have not gotten it, go to the if you didn't get last year's, make sure you go to the website, muskieshop.com. That's https://forward/.
Don't listen to him.
tubesnake.net. Anyway, get over the website or on the app and sign up for it because it is free. I like looking at the pictures.
There's some lovely pictures in there. There really is.
There's some pictures. There's a full page podcast thing, boys.
Yeah, wonderful layout on the podcast. Make sure you listen weekly to the Muskie 360 podcast.
Yeah.
Featuring your host, Stephen Paul. I did my best.
Anyway, it was weak, but I appreciate it. Now, it was sort of cool because we got the full pager in the catalog this year, which I was like, that's sort of fun because there's enough people to listen that was like justified it, and it's sort of cool. Anyway, first person that sends me a picture that they have the catalog and the podcast thing will send you a free bait. First one. Send me a picture to the email there at the app. We'll send you a bait. Anyway, Jay.
Yes, sir.
As always, just to let people know what's hip and what's cool and what's going on, we got a sale, right?
We got a sale going on this weekend, and we're offering free domestic shipping, minimum of only a $25 order.
Nice.
And those hot Daiwa Pro-Rex reels
were
$50 off.
There you go.
I got one of those last summer. That one I was using for my high-speed stuff, you know.
It's a good reel.
The power handle and high-speed. Yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Dude, there's so many. The thing is this, and I looked at the catalog, there's a lot of reel ads, right? Where the companies have put – because – it seems like because of the things that have influenced the supply chain here, a lot of the reels are gone. Things are different, and there's new players on the market, like the Pro-Rex. I actually got a couple of the pins in the mail today, which are bad to the bone. Those are really good reels.
The Phantom, yeah. Good.
I've never had one in my hand, and I went, it's about the same size as the 400 Tranks. It's sort of like the perfect balance between the Tranks and the Toro in your hand. And I went, it's pin. And like, if you've not fished pin, and again, we're not shilling for pin, we carry everything. But I was sort of on the fence. I went, but I was just sort of on the fence. Okay, this is their big introduction to the salt and musky world. But pin's been around longer than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, pin speaks durability. Right. I mean, this is a new reel. We have limited experience, just like most people do with these new ones. They're low profile. They're light. They're, you know, got the pen name behind them. They're not an arm and a leg. What's the Phantom? It's $200.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Like $200. Yeah. But I was impressed by the quality because, like, you know, if you notice, and it's no Muskie Shop can't do anything about it. Nobody really has any Tranks. Just non-existent. So if you need a reel, you're going to have to get something else, and it's time to make a change. Me and you have been talking about that. I mean, I'm changing up what I'm doing because I go, I can't get the stuff, so why am I going to stay brand loyal to stuff that's not available?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I got a couple of Daiwas last year. I have zero experience with Daiwa, you know, baitcasters before. So give that thing a workout, Steve. Let me know, you know, exactly what your feelings are after putting a couple days on it, you know.
Didn't you have the Rhea?
I've got a Revo. Yeah.
No, Rhea.
Rhea, no.
Daiwa Rhea.
Oh, boy.
Ay, ay, you set them up and they fall for it, folks. Every time. That's their least popular reel, by the way.
Well, you know who had a really poor selling reel back in the day?
Whom?
Akuma Isis.
Ice.
Yeah, they had a model called the Isis. It failed miserably.
Halahia! Oh, man.
I'm just saying.
Nobody. What did you catch that on? Hey, yeah. man, that's tough. Oof. It's tough having anything named Isis. That was a tough one. Goodness gracious. Wow, Jay. Wow.
Yep. Hey, we got some Lake X surface lures. Huge ton of them in yesterday.
Get the fat bastards.
Took a long time. They're rolling, so a bunch of guys are already making their purchases, but we got a million of them, so we should be good for a while. If you need any Lake X, you know, fat bees or little bastards or Dr. Evils or Cannonball Juniors, we got them.
There you go.
That's
the thing, is those are not like mass produced per se, so they're tougher to get the hands on. That is cool though. You can't go wrong with those. That's fact.
Yeah. So,
did he get any toads?
No, he's working on those. We've got toads. We don't have a ton of toads right now, but he's making some for us soon.
There you go. Get load.
They're hand poured. I mean, they take time too.
You need to load that toad.
That's your favorite.
Anyway, goodness gracious. I did talk to the fine folks at Livingston Lures this week.
We've got
some really cool stuff going on for the Muskie School. So you got Muskie Shop Bash, July 16th.
Mm-hmm.
A free Muskie School on the 17th. If you're coming, let us know. We're planning for that. The Bash is going to be cool. We're working on... we've mentioned it. We're going to have a bunch more vendors there. Last year was just kick ass. And we gave away, I'm telling you right now, if you were not there and you didn't get one of the bags of crap we were giving away, it was ridiculous.
Or two bags. I mean, we had so many bags to give away of lures, and I mean, oddball stuff too. It wasn't just lures, you know, it was like, hey, you know, caps and, you know, clothing items. And, you know, there was even a camp stove set, wasn't there?
Yeah, somebody donated that. Gave away a Shimano Skix, bump boards.
Yeah, that's right.
So a lot of stuff, Maina's going to be there. Herbie's going to be there. I'm going to be there. A bunch of different people are going to be there. We're working on some new faces that you guys already know. But if nothing else, for the free crap, dude. I was giving away the bags.
Yeah, no kidding.
I was standing there going, I'll keep this bag. I mean, like, when there's, like, bags going out with 13-inch custom-painted grandmas, it sort of made my skin crawl, you know? I could have cherry-picked, like, half of the stuff that was there. So, it's going to be freebies. We're going to do some stuff. And like I said, last year we had so many of you that wanted to come out and fish with us. Free muskie school. Jay's going to be there. Me, Herbie, Pete, one-on-one, whatever you want to know. We'll sit down with you as long as it takes. And we're going to try to figure out what weather allowing. We'll get out on the water with everybody as best as we can. But we're definitely going to do some in-person there and just, like, really dial in on some crazy stuff, some deep dive, some serious, serious digging in. And do, like, you know, this is not for the people that are for the free stuff, you know. So if you get some free stuff and you do that, which will be fun. I'm excited about it. Anyway, that's the big news. That's the news from Lake Suckabagama. Anyway, we got some Q&A we're going to nail out this week. We got some good stuff going on. Anyway, okay. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
Kyle says, I read an article where the writer was adamant that muskies can tell the difference if a lure is being used with a steel or multi-strand leader, that you have to have, I'm paraphrasing here, that you have to have fluorocarbon because they can tell the difference. And this guy was super adamant that it makes a big difference. What are your thoughts? We've covered this a little bit before, but I'll tell you right now, if it's a matter of leader material and that is how finite the bite is, you're in trouble, right?
Probably.
I call bullshit. Bah, bullshit. That's the bullshit alarm on anybody that says that the leader material makes a difference. Again, you guys answer, kids. If they can see the leader, they can see the hooks. All right. I mean, I just don't see. I can't sell me on it unless we get Elon Musk creates a transponder that reads a muskie's mind, and he can tell me.
Yeah. It's kind of like the leader's more for the lure than it is for fish.
That's where we're going. If I'm fishing rubber, crankbaits, rubber, twitchers, you know, all that stuff, there's something to be said about a multi-strand wire, right? I fish pretty much everything on straight wire. I fish some multi-strand just because whatever's laying around. I don't overthink it. It really is one of those deals where I go, let's not overthink this. Right?
Yeah.
If I'm gonna be fishing gliders at all that day, I might as well throw on a straight wire at some point. But outside of that, if it's a difference between if you don't have fluoro, you can't tell me there's a difference between multi-strand wire that has a flexibility and the fluoro. I'm gonna really have an issue there.
A difference in detectability?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Now, the suppleness of the material, how the material affects the action of the bait, definitely can make a difference.
Yeah.
But the leader material itself being low visibility, you can't tell me that if he can see the leader material, the difference that he can't see that big barrel swivel or the big snap or the 7-0 hooks and that those things are unimportant in that scenario. Right. So again, that's why we push the bullshit button on the leader material per se. Now it could be a bite where if you don't have the right action because you don't have the right limberness of material to allow for the perfect presentation, that's where it could come into play. But you're going to be hard pressed in finding a difference between multi-strand and fluorocarbon in that scenario. That'd be my take.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, I like fluorocarbon. You got to keep an eye on it. You can get nicks. You can get abrasions. It's hard for them to bite through multi-strand steel, and it's hard for them to bite through straight wire. So there's that.
I agree on the fluorocarbon thing.
You know,
and using them. Yeah, it's all I used last year, and it's like after every fish that I boated, I checked my leader at some point, and hopefully I'm checking it before I cast again. Right. And you know, it's like quite often there's a little bit of abrasion on there, and it's like, is it enough to weaken it? Well, yeah, it's weakened at some point, but is it enough to not fish with? That's, I guess, make a determination, make an assessment, I should say.
Let me throw this out there. Mm-hmm. And Muskie Shop sells fluorocarbon leaders, so I'm not picking sides here. I'm just calling strikes and bulls. Does it even make sense as a musky angler to throw fluorocarbon leaders? Is there an advantage to that material? Because the flexibility of a multi-strand wire is on par with fluorocarbon. Mm-hmm. And multi-strand wire has less of a potential to break. So are fluorocarbon leaders complete and utter garbage? And it's something that we could take out of the system where you go, you don't need to have you don't need to throw fluorocarbon because there's an inherent risk of bite off that's always present or abrasion.
It's like the initial selling point when that stuff hit the market, when it transferred from saltwater market or whatever to the musky market a decade ago, approximately, was that the invisibility factor was everything. And what we're talking about right now is the invisibility factor isn't the important factor in the presentation. I mean, why use it? I'm not saying I don't like it. I use 130 pound as a main leader choice.
Right. And is it a matter, you know, is it the chicken or the egg kind of deal? You know, is it something you need to throw? Would you be better off just throwing the 100-pound Musky Shop multi-strand?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about that often because I went through, when we were fishing this summer, I threw a bunch of fluorocarbon because it was there, right? Walk in, grab it off the shelf, and we got it. But, you know, I mean, I get it. It's just one of those questions where you go, the potential is there. The same thing with straight wire leaders. And I've sort of gone through this thing with, and you guys have heard me for a long time, straight wire, straight wire, straight wire. If you're not inspecting that, you can run into problems. If you get a kink in it and you straighten it back out, you've actually weakened it.
Weakened it a lot. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm throwing a lot of straight wire and I'm starting to throw multi-strand again because I'm sort of gone, you know what? It doesn't make sense. And it's like practice what you preach. If I go, well, fluorocarbon doesn't matter because of the visibility factor. And so if you sort of take the hierarchy of leaders, quote unquote, fluorocarbon is the coolest, right? Oh, fluorocarbon. That's the buzzword for the last decade. Straight wire is the best for gliders. Multi-strand wire is right there in the middle where everything runs fine on it. It doesn't really affect anything negatively. And it's probably the most maintenance-free setup.
I agree.
So that is food for thought, Jay. Get your spoon and dig in. You know, that if you're one of those guys where you're going, I don't want to kill a fish. I don't want one to break off a leader and swim away with my bait. I think multi-strand, the more I'm fishing it, the more attention I'm paying to the leader material, I go, well, that might be just be the superior material across the board.
I think if you went with it, and if you're on a budget, if you're budget-minded, you can get 2 90-pound 7-strand leaders with ball bearing swivels for the price of one fluorocarbon, you know, for the most part. And like you said, fire and forget.
Yeah.
Super durable.
Super durable. Because to be honest with you, and I'll even just say it, I had an issue. We didn't lose a fish. We just lost a pretty expensive bait because here I've tied up a fresh, and I always use the AFW tooth proof, get it from Musky Shop. Really inexpensive. It takes a few minutes to make a straight wire leader. And had a guy on the boat and he was using it. And he got snagged up in some stuff, right? I say, let me see the leader. He swings it up to me and I go, okay, everything looks fine. Next cast, he hits something else and just pops. And I went, man, what did I miss? You know, what happened there? And it was right at my loop in. And I use the freaking looping tools. I make them the right way and all this stuff. I went, huh, why am I doing this to myself? Why even have that potential there? Because had it been a fish the next cast, it would have been dead. And it sort of bothered me. So I'm starting to look at multi-strand again in that sense, or have been for the last few months. Because I go, what's the advantage? And at the end of the day, the most durable leader period for longevity is the multi-strand. It's going to tell you, you're going to know real quickly if it is frayed or if there's an issue with it. So you're going to be able to see that quicker. You're not looking for little micro abrasions on the fluorocarbon. It's whatever. I mean, everybody throw what you're comfortable with, but I'm starting to sort of circle back to multi-strand, just in some sense. Paul, what are you looking for in a first musky boat? Anything that will float. That's to be honest with you, musky boats are non-existent, you know. Most of them, you're gonna be sacrificing something, right? So big high gunnels, tougher to figure eight, little low toughies, tougher in rough water. You know, I mean, there's always a caveat, right? My biggest thing, and I'm not trying to segue into, oh, we'll sponsor or something, but you guys know I got the Steve Paul Muskie special low, whatever you want to call it. My biggest thing was tackle storage, because I am OCD about how the boat's organized. And so something with tackle storage, and then we get into the rod storage thing. But in general, I don't think you're going to be able to get rod storage in the 99% of the boats for anything that's in the class of what we're throwing anymore, unless you're using like a shield rod that collapses or two-piece rods. So you're going to have to figure out what's important to you. If you fish a bunch of rods, then you're going to need rod storage. And if you're one of these guys, you fish a bunch of rods, but don't have a ton of baits, look at the rods. If you're a bait hoarder like I am, you're going to need bait storage.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get it in there? What are you going to do? You know, if you need custom stuff, shameless plug, you call Josh at Wreck and Rack, right? Who's made Jim's boxes, making me some custom stuff. You know, it depends on what your budget is. I mean, it's not insanely expensive, but if it's a first boat, you're probably not going to go that right. So you're going to be going, okay, how do I store my tackle? How do I store my rods? If you're carrying two Plano big games, one of those big flambos or something like that, okay, cool. Right? So rod storage, tackle storage. Next factor is deck space. Musky fishing, to me, of any freshwater fish, takes up the most deck space. Right? If you need to do a big bad dude figure eight, you need some operating room, right? So I'm going to look for what is the most deck space I can get, the most elevated deck space. If you got to build it, and I've done that in a lot of boats, you take freaking some two bys and some plywood and some carpet, and now you got an elevated deck in the back, or if you need it in the front. But you need to have a game plan to have castability and workability of a fish.
Yeah.
I don't think horsepower or size, I mean, you know, Jay runs one of Jay's boats. He's got a small little river boat with what, a 9.9 Jay or something like that.
Yeah. I think it goes 20 miles an hour.
Jay's got a small,
it's okay.
You know, and
it's my river boat.
Right. But he runs on the river and he's catching muskies out of that versus running around in Rangers and all this other stuff. So be purpose driven. Don't think about you got to look at where you're fishing. So if you're fishing shallow rivers and small bodies of water, you can get away with a lot less boat. If you're fishing big water, you know, and if you're looking for that guidance, you're fishing Minnesota, buddy, I need some deep walls.
Yeah.
Right. If you're a Wisconsin guy and on some of these smaller bodies of water, you can get away with 16 foot semi V or a bass boat. You're going to have to look at what can you afford. Right. And if you're budget minded, focus on deck space and tackle storage.
Yeah. Thought occurred to me. I know. Write it down. Friend of mine bought a huge Ranger. I think he got a 620 about a year ago. And he bought it for the intention of making trips to Green Bay. And he lives around here. He lives in northern Wisconsin, right? And you know how many times he went fishing last year?
Two. Oh, I guessed. I don't know.
Lives on a small lake.
Right.
Which we actually fished last summer a few times. And never took it out there because he could have, you know what I mean?
Right.
He could have gone to the landing and gone, but it's this big, cumbersome boat that is great on big water. It would be an awesome choice if you're fishing Leech Lake every weekend.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, you get a 16 footer that's light, you know, the lakes around here, some of the landings are awful.
Yep.
A short boat is going to be a heck of a lot easier when you got to park, you know, on the side of the road in somebody's lawn.
Yeah.
And zip it into tight, confined spaces, and you'll never need anything bigger than a 16-foot because the biggest lake around here is 3,000 acres.
Right.
There's so much to weigh into the size and hull design, you know? And it's like you got to think about what's going to be comfortable for you and where you're going to use it most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you sink that huge ton of money into a extremely large investment financially and size-wise.
Yeah.
That you might not use too often. You know, maybe you got a buddy that's got a boat like that, you know, that you can get by with for that one trip a year that you're going to use it for that, you know?
I mean, really gauge it on where you're at, because, like, be purpose-driven, because, I mean, I've got a few boats sitting here at the house, and it's like most of them are just sitting there because I got the low, but, you know, I got some stuff for small rivers, this, that, and the other. What do you fish the most? Where do you know you're going to fish the most? Right. And plan for that. Just size appropriate. I mean, if you're fishing shallow rivers, now you need a flat bottom and maybe a jet. So, you know, if it's a lake situation or a river situation, you're going to have to make an assessment on that stuff. But, you know, the deciding factor for me of anything is going to be width and deck space. Right. I'm gonna get the widest boat with the most decking I can get. If you got to build it out, build it out. I've fished a billion times out of John boats we've put decking in, right, in West Virginia, creaking it up. So there's something to be said there. Just make it appropriate. I don't think there's like a home run. It's going to have to be regional, and it's going to have to be what your plans are. And, I don't think there's a boat until you get into that $70,000-$80,000 range. We're getting into the freaking Steve Paul Muskie special and Rangers and Recons and all that stuff where you go, well, I can fish, you know, medium sizing up, but you need to have something on hand if you're fishing freaking some of these ramps, dude. We had a hell of a time this past summer getting my giant boat into some places. You know,
yeah,
some
got
of the
a little
ramps.
Tricky.
Yeah,
yeah,
got tricky.
Sure.
And so look at where you're fishing. Look at what you know you're going to do. Don't base it on, well, we might go to Canada.
All I'm saying. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what you're getting at. We don't buy something on shoulda, woulda, coulda. Buy it on what you will use it for, because that's how you buy something that's going to sit there on the side of the house and rot. And then the old lady's like, meh, meh, meh.
You got to sell that thing.
I'm hearing that right now with the backup boat. Jay's a boat hoarder. The side of Jay's house is covered in boats, folks. Looks like a shipyard.
Not anymore. I gave you that John Boat special, which when you get that decked up and custom painted, I want
to
see pictures.
We're going to in the spring.
Wait.
We're
going
to film out of. I promise, folks, we are going to do some creaking out of that, just to get it reality based here. It is it is going to be me in a 12 foot John boat, but I'm going to put like a 15 inch Solix in it, Jay.
What's that?
The big hummingbird. It'll be like a 12. $300 bolt with a $5,000 unit up front. Folks, I'm dialing
wide screen.
Right, I'm dialing in here, folks. Really downsizing, budget friendly here. I've got Panoptics and Mega Imaging Live.
There's no room to cast, but boy, does it have great electronics.
Folks, I got 19 batteries in this. We're sinking as we speak. Nick, what net do you guys prefer? I have a limited space in my boat. There you go. Hold on. Back to Paul. That's another thing. Where are you going to put your net? Look at your boat. Yeah. You got the, I mean, the prereq of what you got to take out there is you got to take a cooler, tackle, net, rod. You're going to need all that in the boat, so make sure that boat can handle it. I have limited space in my boat, and I fish solo a lot. I don't want a super heavy net. I bought a custom net, and it weighed so much it was difficult. What's a lightweight rod for solo, or excuse me, a lightweight net for solo anglers? Buddy, I'll tell you, Jay, and I've been... The easiest net to get a fish in is the clam. That thing's super easy to slide them in, that or the Frable.
Mm-hmm.
I like them both. I know we sell the drifter nets. The drifter nets are heavy. It is a heavier net. The clam's a little heavier. The Frable, the teardrop style, what's the model number on the Frable, Jay?
The Bruker model, the solo model?
Yeah, no, just the freaking
the big game with the heavy game. Net is the 8425. No, that's yeah. It kind of goes against what he's looking for because that's got that big heavy bag. It's but great once you got a fish in it.
Here's the thing though. No, the thing with that net though, it goes through the water. I mean, I'm not talking like the super thin bags because I'll tell you, man, I went through that phase where I had like the flip over conservate. That thin netting, it comes through the net or it comes through the water really great for about six fish. Then you're sitting there taking freaking line and tying the thing together. Mm. I would go for the lightest frame with the heaviest bag you can get away with. That's just my opinion because I don't want to worry about ripping the bottom.
Clam, Colossus, small musky net. That's the size.
That's the size. That's a hell of a net. That would probably be the take there. Josh, I love topwaters, but I'm not getting great hookups. What's your advice for getting a better hooking percentage on topwater presentations like Fat Bastards and Weagles? So basically walk the dog and straight retrieve topwaters.
Yep.
Jay, what are you thinking?
Well, they're notoriously poor hooking percentage. It's just the nature of topwater. I mean, a lot of times topwater fish are not trying to eat the bait. You know, it's like you woke up the beast and you know what I mean? It's more of a reactionary thing where mm-hmm. they're getting angry and they swipe at it. I mean, if you had great high def, slow motion, you know, footage of some of these strikes that, you know, happen and, you know, give you half a heart attack when they mm-hmm. do occur, you'd probably see that their mouths are closed when they're striking at it. I mean, remember that one when we were up here last summer, just before dark, that it was too dark to fit. Yeah. Well, we didn't have a camera pointing way out, but mm-hmm. that one that came out of the water, and when it came down, it actually hit the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that felt like he, you know, because, you know, I set the hook and yeah. there's nothing there, but I waited to feel something before I set the hook, like you're supposed to do. That's key, but
that's well. The key to hooking on a topwater fish, in my opinion, is stop paying attention once you know he's behind it. And I'm wearing sunglasses, right? Every time I'm on the boat, so usually I just shut my eyes. If I see one hump up behind it, I shut my eyes because you're gonna react before he's there. And you always have these guys say, "Don't set the hook until you feel the weight." If you watch it happen, you're going to set the hook to her. I see that white mouth open. I'm ripping it through the air. So a lot of times, is shutting your eyes is going to do it for you. If you know he's there and you see the water hump up behind it, or you see a fin, you might miss the show, but you're going to get the fish. So there's a decision to be made. If you want to watch him blow it out of the water like you went to SeaWorld, you know, you're going to be good. But for me, I literally shut my eyes. I mean, I just go, okay, there's one coming. I know I'm going to execute my eight. I can deal with him in the eight, but for the next freaking 40 feet, I ain't open my eyes till I feel that leader hit the rod too. Because if I see him blow up on it, I'm going to miss him. So that's what I do. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid.
Yeah. I think, you know, half the fish that are actually striking baits aren't actually eating it. So, you know, it's like sucker fishing. I mean, there's a lower percentage of hookups there. It's just the nature of the beast. And, you know, certain surface baits, like crawling baits, like maybe a Moldy's Hog Wobbler.
Mm-hmm.
I've had real good luck with that. you know, like right at dark, especially if you're on a great spot or you got a, you know, you had a fowl or a fish spotted, in terms of them eating, because it's slower, they can home in on it. There's something about tail baits that are extremely noisy and walk the dog baits, which are extremely erratic, that, you know, a walk the dog surface bait, like a weagle or a jackpot, is a glide bait above water. Obviously, I think we're talking about that last week. You know, it kind of hypnotizes them, you know, and if you can get them to either A, show themselves, I think that would be a better scenario than actually having them hit it. You know, if you raise a fish on that, go back with something underwater.
Speaking of, and it's funny you say that, is because I've been talking to, there's a guy named Lawrence in Canada, right? Little secret project going on here. And I told Jim about this. Dude's got to walk the dog bait that you can drive subsurface and work like a diving rise at the same time. And so it's a big bait that Gord Fizer's really into. If you guys don't know Gord Fizer, he's a legendary Canadian muskie angler.
Yeah.
He's saying it's the shiznit. And so we're going to check that out. He's sending me and Jay a couple. Hopefully we'll get some here at the shops here quickly. But it's interesting because basically what we were talking about, Jay, is like, you know, you can really elicit some strikes going, you know, slightly subsurface, but this guy's got a bait that sort of does both. So more on that coming soon. You know, that'll be interesting. Okay. Yeah, I didn't even warn you about that one.
No, I didn't. No, didn't know about it.
Okay. Lane. I need a new reel, but I don't have a ton of cash. What's your recommendation? Sub-250. Ooh, let me get up the internet here.
Well,
I'm gonna go to www.
Going to muskyshop.com. Yeah, let me see. What is those things net out that I was talking about earlier? Those
Pin Fathom
Pro Rexes.
Yeah, you got the Pin Fathom. It's $299. Pin Squall.
That's the one you got. Yes. Yeah, that's under $200.
You basically at this point, boys, I'm going to just tell you, calling them like I see them. It is what it is. He said sub 250. You got Komodos. All right. And you got Pin. It is what it is. Oh, Daiwa Lexa Power Handle, the win, right? So you got a Daiwa, you got a Squaw, and you got a Komodo.
Whew. Yeah. The Pro Rex are going to be close with the sale. I think they're just
well, with the sale.
They're going to be just over with the sale. Yeah. But yeah,
if he's,
that, you know, Squall you got might be worth rolling the dice on something like that.
They
Dave.
Look pretty ripping. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm not the biggest Daiwa dude. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. If it was to me, the hierarchy in that purchase is going to be, I love the dude. I have spent some time with the Pins. They're cool as hell. The Pins feel the best to me. The Komodo is, I mean, it's going to be interchangeable at this point, unless like for the next 6 months, I'm just like in love with the Pins, but I like the Komodos. I have whatever their big 400 size is. Right. I like those reels. I mean, those two are great. The rock solid. I can say this. I've done zero maintenance to any of my Akuma stuff.
Okay. Like,
and I'll say this. When it comes to reels, leave them alone. I don't care. I hate, like, the commentary of, well, that reel feels smooth, right? At a certain point, when you fish enough, none of them feel, quote-unquote, smooth. They're going to make noise.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I've got, you know, Beasts and Revos and all this stuff that I just live and die by. And, yeah, they're really quiet the first 3 months. You know? When you fish them 90 days straight, and I do shit like that all the time, where it's like I'm on the boat every day, there is no reel that is going to be quote unquote smooth or quiet. They start sounding cranky. They start, you know, it just is what it is. And there's no amount of grease. There's no amount of getting in there and fooling around where you're going to do more good than harm.
Like you said, leave them alone.
Leave it alone. And when it goes to hell in a handbag, chuck it in a trash can. right? Because the one thing I'll say is this, I've repaired, and now mind you, if it's like recent, like I'm saying, let's go 2 years, right? Two seasons and something breaks and it's not something stupid. It's internal or this or the other. I mean, I don't want a new worm drive gear and an old drive gear. Now I have uneven wear and tear on stuff and you know what's going next. And it's sort of like at a certain point, you know, if the frickin' transmission's out in the truck, everything's going downhill from there usually. Just call it a day, you know. With that being said, there are some really good real repair places, but once you got enough time on these things, it just, they are disposable in some sense. With maybe the exception of maybe the Calcuttas. I mean, they're sort of built like a brick shit house.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, get your mileage out of it. Like I said, leave them alone. I Jay, you've done it. We've seen people come into the shop where they've opened the reel up and it's over with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my commentary there, but you're gonna get some mileage. Like I said, the Komodo, absolutely. The Pin, absolutely. The Daiwa, that would be my personal third choice, but Jay's a Daiwa guy. So, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong. Those are your three right now. What do you think? You like your Daiwa pretty well though, correct?
Well, I'm happy with it. Yeah, it worked great. It's super comfortable. It's light. The drag worked great. I caught, you know, at least a few fish on that reel, uh-huh. You know, and worked for, it was kind of my tube reel.
Uh-huh.
Tubes, big plastics.
Yep.
I've got a different reel for my Titans. Actually, my Titan, because I only have one. Thank you.
They'll be there in a minute and a half, bud.
Yes, they will.
That's a whole, hopefully next. Oh, God, don't even tell me. It's Nightmare Fest. We'll get there. Yeah, I mean, like I said, all around reel, 6-3-1, the Pin or the Komodo, J-Lex the Daiwa. You can't go wrong with any of them. There's no, yeah. I mean, they're all going to break, dudes. They all are. If you fish enough, it's all going to feel like shit and sound like shit. And as long as the drag still works and it casts, you're in it to win it. All right, Jeff, do you guys make your own leaders? Okay, we talked about leaders earlier, but it says, do you make your own leaders, wire or fluorocarbon? What's the difference? We touched on this obviously heavily. We're not going to bang on it again. Wire, straight wire will give you a better glide bait presentation. There you go. See earlier conversation in differences. Mr. Muskie says, what old baits that are no longer made do you still throw?
Mm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Got to think about that one.
Huh.
I know a lot of them that aren't made anymore aren't available anymore that I don't use.
Yeah, exactly what I was going like. Yeah, I know. Well, that's not made anymore. There's some that are still made that should not be made anymore. freaking. I mean, it's like a waste of wood, dude. Not made anymore, but I still throw them.
Man. Oh, I've got one. I got a Lay Lure Surfster, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, Frenchie LeMay. He had that line out in the like mid to late 90s. They were produced, and they were kind of a high-end bait at that time. They were kind of pricey, and they were kind of limited. They're made out of wood, and the collectors just were eating those up as fast as they could be, you know, go out.
Right.
And it's kind of a hog wobbler type version, and it's just like, man, I love that bait.
You know,
great tick to it and crawl.
It was taking me a second to get there because I was trying to think of what the original DF Shums made by David French.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I don't know if he's going to make them more or whatever, or what the deal is. Cause Shum Shum is a subsidiary of Chaos. And so they make Shum Shums there, but I definitely still throw the old wooden Shum Shums. Cause they got their own vibe for sure. Right. Wooden Phantoms.
Hmm.
And, you know, I used to until I lost a grunt. I had a grunt for a long time, which is like this 15-inch grunt. I don't even know if I ever caught a fish on it. But the guy that was making Phantoms used to make that grunt trolling bait. It was like 15 inches. That was just me dreaming. Oh, goodness. And what was it? We talked about earlier today, Jay, the Rumbler.
And that surface bait, yeah.
The Muskie Shop has, what's it called the Muskie Shop has? It's the exact same bait.
Oh, Magic Bait? Magic Back, I think?
Magic Back. Let me look here.
Yeah.
That was a cool, we were talking about that earlier because it's like, I need to get my hands on one because my one, the eyeball's knocked out of it and it's running like crap. Let's see here. I'm on the internet. Have you ever been on the internet?
Magic Back surface bait. Yeah, we've got a few. We've got a few left.
Where is it?
It's called the Magic Back surface bait.
I want to see it with my own eyes.
It's item number 620-130.
That bait, and it's just like you look at it, it's sort of like this weird in-between sound of a pacemaker and a tallywhacker. And I know they still make gooches, and I will say this, dude. If you're getting follows on Fat Bastards and Top Raiders, and you can't, like, make sure you own a Gooch's tallywhacker. Like, they are a really good surface bait, and they really catch a lot of fish.
Oh, that used to be the ticket, man.
I mean,
that used to be the one.
Get your Gooch on.
Mm-hmm.
How's your Gooch, Jay?
Awesome.
Jay's Gooch is awesome, folks. Gooch check. Like, if you're ever out fishing, Jay, right?
Yeah.
Just in the middle, just say, hey, everybody, Gooch check. Just checking.
Tallywhacker.
Check your Gooch. Anyway.
You got it. You know it.
You know it. Gooch inspector. No, I mean, I like these baits, dude. And it's one of these oddities where not everybody's got one because it was that weird Rumbler and they stopped making them and you go, how, you know, at a certain point, and topwater's a weird deal, and we're always sort of shitting on topwater. Oh, still, I mean, we all love throwing topwater. You just shouldn't do it all friggin' day. But, you know, having that selection, the Top Raider, Fat Bastard, Gooch's Tallywhacker, Pacemaker, you know, that's sort of like the MO. This is sort of that outlier there. If you don't have a Gooch's and you don't have a Rumbler, or, well, excuse me, Magic Back, Magic Dance is something to look at. All right, Eric, never been asked this before, Jay. What size rod should I buy?
Yeah, it's the first time for everything.
Everyone say it with us. 86-296, appropriate for your body size. Say it aloud, Jay. It's indoctrination at this point.
I know where you're going with this. You know who came into the shop yesterday was neighbor Steve and Buck. His buddy Buck, and they're looking at another. She's looking at another shield rod.
My name is Buck, and I'm here to look at rods.
Buck Montana,
Buck,
and you can see him. He's featured in the background in our Sandcat video from over the summer. Yep, good guy, funny guy. Anyway, yeah, we're talking rods, talking shield rods, and anyway, Steve's talking about neighbor Steve. That is about he's thinking about getting a telescoping model. Mm-hmm. For his next 8.6. He likes 8.6s. He's about 6'1", I think. I mean, he's a taller guy, you know, but he, you know, the way he described fishing out of his boat, he's lower to the water and he doesn't want a rod exceeding 8.6. It's not as, he's tried them and 8.6 fits him great. So,
right.
You know, in your case, and we brought, you know, your case up where you're like, once you started fishing 9.6s, you're like, that's the ticket. It's the cat's meow. I'm never going back to something shorter.
Never.
For most applications.
Oh, no, I don't even think any. I'm just done with it. I mean, we could go on, and actually, Jay, I'll say this. This is my thing. Even if you're not a taller in stature, I warned you. I said 2 days this past week, I was filming for Muskie Shop TV. Some of the most ridiculous figure eight strikes I've ever gotten. And my reel is in the water. I'm getting down there. And that's what it took, right? Because of light penetration. And I like the extra length, man. I'm just, you know, I got people fishing 9-footers that are mid 5 foot tall, 5'6", 5'7". There's something to be said about the width of the figure eight and the turning radius, but again, size appropriate. You know, I mean, I don't know where the cutoff is height wise, but You know, everybody's like scared of these long rods, and you're going, don't be afraid. It's not that big. That's the name of this episode, Jay.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
You know, so whatever. Find something that's size appropriate for you. What fits your stature? What's comfortable? There you go.
If you've tried an 8.6 or a 9 and you like it, but you're thinking, I want to go that one step further and maybe experiment with a 9.6, they're going to be telescoping and they go down to,
oh yeah,
I think just under 8 feet for storage. Oh, that's dude, the 9.6, really not an issue for most vehicles.
Yeah, we're going to call those the 9'6" Steve Paul ass crackers right there, boys, because you're going to crack some ass with them. No, they're really good. I like the 9.6. It's so much easier. Whatever, you know, we've beat that horse. The rod horse is dead and he is in chunks. We've beaten him to a blistering pulp, but anyway, that would be it. Buy something that's appropriate. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
Say goodnight.
Already?
Already.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys. We'll catch you next week. Weather. Rhinelander boy abducted by beavers, rescued by hometown hero Freddie Mercury Palermo.
Local quilting circle erupts in violence. Have all the Northwoods grannies gone bad?
Taxidermists arrested after showing elementary school students there definitely is more than one way to skin a cat.
Are local supper clubs a hot spot for the Northwoods Illuminati?
Investigative journalist Piper Bottoms exposes a murder-for-hire plot involving the Smitty Bake Company and some overbaked beans.
But first, Elmer Jensen with the Northwoods weather.
This is Elmer with the Northwoods 5-Day Weather Report.
Sunday, cloudy with a high of 22 and a low of 10. The winds will be 5 to 10 miles an hour. Sunday night, oh no, cloudy skies early, partly cloudy after midnight, low minus 11 degrees Fahrenheit, winds southeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Oh, this is ridiculous. I can't feel my hands. I can't stand it anymore. My hands are so cold.
Well, that got awkward. Up next, JSE with sports.
Fuck the Bears. Aaron Rodgers is God.